This sermon was uploaded by Grace Community Church in San Antonio, Texas, and our website is www.gccsatx.com, or you can find us on Sermon Audio by going to www.sermonaudio.com/gcc.
Well, is persecution coming, and how do we prepare for that? Well, first of all, we never know what's going to happen. We can say that if things continue in the trend that they're going right now, persecution is quite likely. Now, there's a type of socialism in Europe, and there's not a lot of persecution of Christians, hardly any. But here's the reason. The church is so weak in Europe that it's just ignored. There's no reason. It's not a danger to anybody. They're just considered irrelevant. The worst thing that could happen to us is we become the same way. We become so irrelevant to what's going on in society that there's no need to even deal with us. Another thing that's very important is God prepares His people whenever they're going to enter into a time of crisis. I don't think that we need to do some exceptional preparing. I just think we need to be biblical about our daily preparation that we all need, whether there's persecution or not. I believe it was John Wesley. They asked him, what would you do if you knew the Lord was coming back this evening? He said, well, I'd get up in the morning early, as always. I'd have my prayers, my devotional, tea, breakfast, go out and preach, come back as I always do every day, have time of prayer, rest, go out and preach, come back. And the point that he was making, although I didn't quote him exactly, please understand that, the point that he's making is, I'm living in the will of God. There's no need for me to change anything. And that's the way we need to be. We need to be preparing and living in the will of God, every day growing in our faith, growing in our knowledge of the Word, growing in our ability to defend our faith and give a reason for the hope that's within us, striving for godliness, disciplining ourselves for godliness. Just keep living like we are. And constantly seeking the Lord for clear direction. Lord, what do you want me to do? I have to admit that with these change of events, that I am really earnestly seeking the Lord. Lord, what do you want me to do? How then shall I live? What would you want me to do something different? Different emphasis in the ministry. What do you want? And so, brothers, don't be surprised if the dark days, first of all, I've got one thing I'd like to recommend. Don't listen to a lot of talk radio. Don't listen to a lot of Christian talk radio, please. You're going to get so scared, you're going to, you know, do a Y2K thing on us or something. Start hoarding food and, you know, go live in Alaska or something. I don't know. I mean, don't do that. Read scriptures, continue on, grow in godliness, and be hopeful and positive. We don't know what's going to happen. I mean, after all, maybe the post-millennialists are right. You know, we don't know. We know that He reigns. We know that already there have been many positive things that have gone on. We are such a people of culture. I mean, just think about this. We actually are convinced that people ought to retire. You realize that? Where'd we get that idea? That they ought to retire, have money to live on, live the last 25 years of their life doing nothing. Or like John Piper says, collecting seashells or playing golf or something. That's pretty much getting smashed. That's a good thing. People, you know, heard for so many years Christians, you know, identifying themselves with the Republican Party. I mean, where is it now? You see, I mean, there are a lot of positive things. People who were hoping in things that they should not hope in, they're no longer hoping in. They're hoping in God. They're crying out to God. Who knows that some of this isn't an answer to praying? Look, they're not the ones that have the power. Christ has all power. You read about wonderful works of God in history and Christians shining like lights in the midst of a perverted generation, and you read those books and you go, oh, wow, man, I wish I just could live like that, live in that time, and wow, Christ being so real. Well, maybe you're going to get your chance. It'll be wonderful. The best flavor of Christianity I ever knew was those years in Peru. When bombs were blowing up, machine gun fire interrupting our church service, rocket launchers, scared to death. Communion was sweet. Standing in line for about 4 hours to get a bag of milk and a bag of rice. Couldn't drive people out of the church. Fellowship was sweet. It's all anyone had was Christ and the other believers. No talk of IRAs or insurance or anything. See a brother get up, a leader among the Peruvians, give a word from God, brothers, it has been appointed unto us to suffer. Hear stories from the mountains where God would supernaturally intervene to save an entire little Baptist congregation that no one even knew existed from an approaching army. One terrorist asked, a couple of terrorists asked, why did you guys not come in and kill everybody in that church? Well, how could we with all those soldiers standing around the entire building? And they were the biggest soldiers we've ever seen in our life. There's no way we were going to go up to that church building. A little mud hut Baptist church in the middle of the mountains. Yeah, there was an army around it. You delight to read about those things. You may get your chance to live in them. Exciting times. Okay, that's a very good question. How would we explain that Old Testament saints were saved by Christ? Well, first of all, no one sins in any dispensation, if we want to use that type of terminology, in any age, no one sins have ever been forgiven apart from the atoning work of Christ. So, as we understand from Romans chapter 3, you know, that passage that we always go to, let's just go to there for a moment. Romans 3:25, whom God displayed publicly as a propitiation in His blood through faith, this was to demonstrate His righteousness, because in the forbearance of God He passed over sins previously committed. For the demonstration, I say, of His righteousness at the present time, so that He would be just and the justifier of the one who has faith in Jesus. We see Old Testament saints with believing faith. And they were justified by that faith. But how can God justify them by their faith without an atonement? Without a propitiation? Well, that propitiation came in the person of Christ. So Abraham, every Old Testament saint that ever was reconciled with God, justified, and brought into the presence of God, brought into glory after death, every one of them, it was by virtue of the death of Christ. So all the Old Testament saints are in heaven only because of Christ. That everyone is in agreement on. Now, the next question is this. Were these Old Testament saints saved because they had faith in Christ? Now, some people would say that the Old Testament saints knew a lot more about the Messiah than we think they did. And that they were trusting in a Messiah who would come and die for them. I'm not so sure about that. I do believe they understood many things about the Messiah. But I don't think their gospel was that clear. Because when Paul speaks about the gospel, when we understand the gospel in the New Testament, we understand that we have received a lot more revelation about the gospel than anyone's ever had in the New Testament through the person of Christ, His coming. And that the prophets of old were studying these things and examining these things to see what was going on. But they did not have the fullness of understanding that we have. Here's what I do know. Men have always been saved by believing what God has told them. Abraham believed God and it was reckoned to him as righteousness. Now, that faith led to justification. God could justify Abraham only because of the atoning death of Christ. But I do not believe that Abraham was saved because he believed everything about the gospel that I understand today. I believe he knew of the hope of a Messiah. I believe that he knew of the need of atonement. But to put everything together like we have today, I wouldn't go that far. So men have always been saved by believing the revelation they have received. So he believed God and it was reckoned to him as righteousness. Okay? Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, a wonderful statement beginning in verse 6, where David also speaks of the blessing on the man to whom God credits righteousness apart from works. Blessed are those whose lawless deeds have been forgiven, whose sins have been covered. Blessed is the man whose sin the Lord will not take into account. Here we see a wonderful thing on justification by faith, not by works, but by faith, which also presents a problem that I believe that the Old Testament saints knew about and wrangled with, and that is this: how can a just God forgive lawless deeds, and how can He cover up sin? There has to be an atonement. And again, I believe that they looked forward to something, but I'm not going to say that they had the full revelation of what we now understand. Then we get over to Abraham, and starting in verse 17, as it is written, a father of many nations have I made you, in the presence of him whom he believed, even God, who gives life to the dead and calls into being the thing that which does not exist. In hope against hope, he believed. What did he believe? That God was going to give him a son. In hope against hope, he believed so that he might become the father of many nations, according to which had been spoken, so shall your descendants be. Without becoming weak in faith, he contemplated his own body, now as good as dead, since he was about 100 years old, and the deadness of Sarah's womb. Yet with respect to the promise of God, he did not waver in unbelief, but grew strong in faith, giving glory to God, and being fully assured that what God had promised, he was also able to perform. Therefore, it was also credited to him as righteousness. Now, what had God spoken to him? He was going to have a son. He believed God against all hope. What does that mean? Against what the physical eye could see. His body is good as dead. His wife's body is good as dead with regard to bearing children, but he believed God. And it was credited to him as righteousness. Now that doesn't mean, though, that Abraham only had a concept of God has promised me a son. I believe it, and therefore there's justification. I believe Abraham, they all had this idea of sin and the need for atonement, the need for atonement. We come to Isaiah, which gives us the clearest picture, Isaiah 53, of this need for atonement. We see the battle in Job, crying out, "Oh, that there was a mediator, someone who could put his hand on us both." We don't see Job saying, "Oh, at a certain time, a Messiah is going to come and is going to be that mediator." And I believe that he had the hope of a Messiah, but there wasn't the clarity that we have today. Men have always been saved by believing the testimony that God has given them. And in these last days, God has spoken through His Son, given testimony of His Son with all clarity. Before we go on, a brother brought up the question of, you know, there's a lot of the different religions and things like that that are out there, and have to be able to give an answer for the hope within us. And if we say that our God is light, they may say that their God is light. If we say that life is in Him, life is in their God. And so we're in a pluralistic, most definitely a pluralistic society and a pluralistic age. It's not like preaching the gospel in the 1940s in Alabama anymore. Now, we can wrangle all day. If you sit down with a man in the Quran, for example, and you sit there and argue back and forth on which book is right, which one's oldest, which one's this, which one's that, I feel like what you're going to probably end up doing is entering into a heated debate using a lot of simply intellectual arguments. And when you do that, illustrations, facts about history, all sorts of things, you're not proclaiming, "Thus saith the Lord." There's not the power